Hi, I'm Jeff Walters, and welcome to The Minutes. Wishing you a happy new year, and thanks for listening today. It's great to have you along on The Minutes for the week of January the 6th, 2025. This is a City of Thunder Bay podcast. The Minutes takes a look at what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week. You can find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, including our YouTube channel and our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. On this episode, I'll have a rundown of what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week in an interview with Callie Hemsworth on the 2025 Community, Youth, and Cultural Funding Program. We'll hear about the program and why it's important to so many groups and people across Thunder Bay in just a few minutes. But first, one announcement at City Council on Monday night. On January 22nd, there will be an information session regarding the 2025 budget. It will start at 6:30 at City Hall. The session is informal and open house style, with the public having a chance to ask questions and highlight any concerns to administration. Those suggestions or concerns will then be brought back to Council and factored into budget discussions. Prior to the opening of City Council and its moment of silence, Mayor Ken Boshtoff spoke briefly about former Councillor Ken Wendt, who died recently. He served as an at-large councillor from 2000 until 2003. Wendt is survived by his children, grandchildren, and numerous other relatives. Mayor Ken Boshtoff started off the first meeting of 2025 with the State of the City address. Boshtoff opened the speech, noting that as the city moves forward, it should do so with humility, an openness to learning and commitment to truth and reconciliation, noting that we should honor the lands, waters, and peoples who made Thunder Bay home, ensuring that we care for it today so it can sustain future generations. Boshtoff noted that there were many accomplishments in 2025, including resilience and ambition through record-breaking infrastructure projects and new local businesses. He noted that as chair of the Mayor's Task Force on Building More Homes, there has been progress in new construction and improving the city's infrastructure. That includes exceeding the province's housing target by 132% and streamlining development and supporting affordability. The securing of $20 million from the federal government's Housing Accelerator Fund allowed the city to finish putting residential building permits online, development of a citywide community improvement plan for housing, updating zoning bylaws to encourage higher density, and creating 6 housing grant streams. Boshtoff said city-owned lands were also made available for development, further fueling housing progress. By the end of 2024, a record 329 new units were under construction toward the target of 1,700 homes by 2027. As well, 923 permits were issued, valued at almost $224 million, and nearly 6,000 inspections were completed by Thunder Bay's Building Services Division. The city also declared 14 property surplus and advanced agreements for some major and very exciting projects, Boshtoff said. The mining, forestry, and energy sectors also contributed significantly to Thunder Bay over the past year. Plus, there are now 400 businesses that contribute to the mining sector, and there is lots of potential growth in this area. Boshtoff said that the Winter Games in February of 2024 showcased the spirit of the city, uniting people in celebration of our talents, culture, and friendly competitiveness. And Boshtoff said that our tourism infrastructure saw continued investments, including waterfront upgrades and enhanced recreational spaces, solidifying Thunder Bay as a premier destination. However, there was also acknowledgement that while there are some definite successes, there are also significant social and health challenges faced by the City of Thunder Bay and many other cities. Complex issues, including homelessness, mental health, and addictions remain. Boshtoff said the city will continue to work closely with community partners and call on the provincial and federal governments to provide necessary resources to address these crises. Moving forward into 2025, Thunder Bay is poised for transformative growth, Boshtoff said, with a focus on attracting investments, supporting small businesses and entrepreneurs, and creating a business-friendly environment that drives job creation. It includes bold strategies to address climate change and promote renewable energy initiatives, ensuring a greener and more sustainable future. Boshtoff said that in the coming year, he also wants to be more grassroots in the city, with more regular updates and communications. The State of the City address was closed by an acknowledgement of City Council, staff, and new City Manager John Collin for his leadership. Voshchov said that as a longtime leader in the city, he is enthused by the leadership and vision of those who are in council chambers as councillors and staff. He also said he wanted to recognize the relationship with Indigenous communities, particularly Fort William First Nation, and that strengthening those bonds and addressing critical issues like land and shared resources will remain a priority in 2025. City Council approved a report on the 2025 Community, Youth, and Cultural Funding Program. The report also designates an operating grant cap for next year, 2026, of $220,000. The funding for this year's program, 2025, is part of the upcoming budget deliberations. The program is how Council and the City are able to fund and support nonprofit community, youth, and cultural organizations. The program itself generates a significant economic impact, according to a report from administration. For each dollar the city contributes, $5.89 is leveraged through other funding or earned revenue. This also has an impact on employment, as the organizations supported by the program employ 515 people. More than 4,000 volunteers are also used by the program supported by this fund. This year, just over $3 million is recommended for funding 18 operating grants and $55,000 allocated to in-year grants. Funding is recommended based on criteria related to community need and impact, financial need, organizational and board capacity, sustainability, and evidence of other sources of revenue. Applications are evaluated by grant review teams comprised of administration and community members, and any appeals are reviewed by an appeal committee comprised of members of council. Next year, the process is slated to be online instead of in its current manual format. More than 376,000 people collectively are impacted by this funding. About $2.8 million is slated to be used as sustaining grants. Sustaining grant recipient organizations are an integral part of the City of Thunder Bay's identity. They fill a service void, positively affect quality of life, and generate an economic benefit. The recipients include the Regional Food Distribution Association, Roots Community Food Center, Shelter House Thunder Bay, Boys and Girls Club, Definitely Superior Art Gallery, Magnus Theatre, Northwestern Ontario Sports Hall of Fame, Thunder Bay Art Gallery, Thunder Bay Community Auditorium, Thunder Museum, and the Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Just over $155,000 will be provided as operating grants. Operating grant recipient organizations are considered by Council to have an ongoing presence in Thunder Bay and a track record of providing quality programming or services. This grant is designed to support a range of community, youth, and cultural organizations. They include the Community Clothing Assistance, Lakehead Social Planning Council, Northwestern Ontario Women's Center Good Food Box Program, Evergreen A United Neighborhood, Female Broader Collective, Multicultural Association of Northwestern Ontario, and Community Arts and Heritage Education Project. $55,000 in project grants are also awarded this year. Project grants provide periodic support to special projects of value to the community. They're carried out by a variety of nonprofit community, youth, and cultural organizations, as well as individual artists in the city. Focus areas include anti-racism, truth and reconciliation, community safety and well-being, culture, youth, and sport development. This year, the recipients include Nokiwin Tribal Council, Autism Northwest, Thunder Bay and Area Food Strategy, Thunder Pride, Youth Climate Action Council, Coalition for Waverly Park and the 150th Anniversary Celebration, Creation Collective, and Northern Ontario Writers' Workshop. And finally, a report on the status of the Woodside Parkette on Woodside Street has been deferred. In June, a report was presented by administration asking to declare the parkette as surplus. That would kickstart a process to sell the land and make it available for development. Council decided to hold off on selling that parkette based on feedback from the neighborhood, and that the neighborhood would make a plan for the land. Now, the administration says that the neighborhood recently provided a concept plan for the area, and more review is needed with the neighborhood and city staff. The report on the parkette and what to do with the land is now on the agenda for the March 3rd council meeting. And that's a wrap as to what happened at council this week. For more information on anything that happens at council, please visit our website, thunderbay.ca/council. It's a city-run program that impacts 376,000 people combined. There's a good chance that a service you use or at least interact with has been impacted by the city's Community, Youth, and Cultural Funding Program. On Monday night, Council got an update on the status of the program for 2025. Tally Hemsworth is the Coordinator of Planning, Projects, and Development with the Community Services Department, and she was at Council last night. Tally, thanks for coming into the Minute Studio today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Yeah, glad you could make it in today. So this is a program. It's been around for a number of years, so why do you have to go to Council, I guess, every year about this?
Great question. So we go to Council each year. It's a bit of a heads up to Council prior to the budget submission in January and February. And so we like to inform Council of what's coming in terms of how the review team made their recommendations for municipal funding through this program. And there were a couple of recommendations for the program as well that came through that report. So it gives us an opportunity to make new recommendations, but also to provide the community with some awareness of the program as well.
So it's almost like a heads up.
Yes, exactly.
Like here's what's coming. Okay. So there's many people and programs across Thunder Bay that are impacted by this funding. Can you maybe give me some examples of what the community youth and cultural funding does for Thunder Bay?
For sure. It ranges really from everything from food security and shelter organizations and clothing banks and that kind of thing to after-school youth programs, services for youth, as well as your arts and cultural organizations in the city. And so there's a couple of different focus areas within the program. It does extend a little bit further on the project grant side too. We also have organizations that apply for projects that are related to anti-racism, truth and reconciliation, as well as sport development.
So can you give me some specifics off the top of your head? I don't expect you to know every penny, but give me some specifics.
In terms of the amount that's being recommended for 2025, it's just over, I believe it's $3,069,000, I think, something like that, that's going in. And there's a number of different categories. So those include not just the project grants, but also there's an operating grant category that's looking at kind of the core operating costs for things like utilities and wages for staff, marketing fees, auditing fees, really those core operating costs. It doesn't capture capital budget. And then it goes up another category to the sustaining category. And those are your longstanding organizations that Council has deemed to be integral to the community. So on the community side, you'd be looking at organizations like Shelter House and RFDA and recently Roots Community Food Center. On the culture side, we'd be looking at groups like the Auditorium, the Thunder Bay Museum, Symphony, some of those longstanding institutions in the community.
Yeah, so these are groups that when you're saying them, I'm going, oh, they've been around forever kind of thing, right?
Exactly. I mean, some of them, if you look at the Thunder Bay Museum, for example, the Historical Society there has been around for a very long time. So yes, there's definitely, this is really the core funding opportunity for those organizations that without municipal funding, many of them could not sustain themselves even with other levels of government funding. So it is a really crucial pot of funding for these organizations to continue.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what does this money mean for some of these supported programs?
Well, it means that they can continue to exist. I mean, it means that they're able to provide the staff that are needed to provide those programs and services. It means that they can provide, you know, food and shelter to the community, and it means entertainment as well, and community well-being and safety. It really covers a wide range of different programs and services in the community.
One thing I noticed that there was a cap on funding. So is there a bit of a, you know, and I'm sure this is an obvious question, but a greater demand than what we're able to provide?
In some cases, so maybe I'll clarify that. So the different categories have different types of budget directives. So the sustaining category, which is those longstanding organizations, those have to follow budget directives. The operating category has to have a cap of $220,000, and that's being recommended to continue for 2026 funding as well. And that is capped at that level, so it does include a little bit of room. So in the past, we would get quite close to a cap. We wanted to make sure that we had some room in there in case there were appeals. We do have an appeal process, but also to account for new organizations that are coming through the program that haven't applied before. And then on the project side, we have those are budgeted in year. So in 2025, that pot will replenish. And that that cap has been slightly increased just because we did have quite a few projects. We did do a really big push to get more organizations aware of that category, and it's the uptake on that has been really successful. However, it does mean that there is more of a competition for that fund.
Right, right. And then you said sustaining versus operating, I guess. What's kind of the difference between those two?
Operating is more of the entry point for operating funding. Sustaining, it's the same application form, but it does come with some additional criteria. So you have to have a minimum 5 years of consecutive funding through the operating category. And then there's a number of other criteria as well that they have to meet. And council actually has to be the ones to approve moving into that category.
Mm. And then what about, I guess we'll get into this actually in a second into applying and that sort of thing. But there's many different types of services that are funded through this program. So why are there different amounts maybe funded for one program versus another?
So there's a couple of different reasons. So for example, and something that was brought up at council last night was that the cultural organizations, it's very typical that municipalities will fund more of a greater portion of their budget than a provincial or a federal government potentially. A lot of other types of funding are very project-based, and so cultural organizations typically rely on municipalities for that core funding that they can rely on. Whereas community safety and well-being or social service or youth organizations tend to have greater access to other pots of funding. So whether it's through the province or federal government or other types of funding that cultural organizations don't typically have access to. So it is fairly typical of, municipalities across Canada that they would be funding a greater percentage of those cultural organizations' budgets. And we do, in recent years, we have made some adjustments to the program to make sure that we're reducing barriers for those social service organizations, because we know that there's a need in the community. There's rising costs, there's greater demand for some of those social services. So we've made some adjustments and have increased our awareness for those organizations to apply.
And we also know, too, that there's also project funding that you do as well. This isn't just operating and sustaining. Maybe touch on that for a moment.
For sure. The project, it's a really fun category. Excuse me. It's a great category because you get, I'll say, a great bang for your buck in that category. It's a type of fund that is looking at special one-time activities, but they can have quite a big impact on the community and a high range of different activities that are funded through that program. So, I mean, we've funded everything from reconciliation training to art therapy workshops to skateboard clinics, creating new cricket clinics for newcomers, curling. There's a lot of different projects that have been funded through that category. And it is a lower amount. They're typically below $10,000, but they do have a strong impact.
And then tell me about getting this funding. This isn't just like you show up, you fill in the form and you get the money, right? There's a bit of a process to it.
There is a process. So there's an application process and applications come to a review team. So that's both staff and, as I said, volunteer community members that take, an in-depth look at the applications, but also the financials of the organizations or applicants, just to make sure that there is financial need. So there's a number of different criteria. Financial need is one of them, but also there's things like community impact and need for that service. We try to make sure that there's not a duplication of services that are already funded. So if organizations come to us in advance and we already know that we're funding something similar, we might say to them, hey, why don't you look at partnering with this organization that's already being funded? The review team would look at the applications, and there's a set of criteria that they evaluate the applications based on. There's slightly different criteria between the different focus areas. So there's sort of your general program criteria, but then there's additional criteria depending on if you're coming in the youth or culture or community side of the program.
And then, if people want to get involved, how should they apply for this or get involved?
So they can find more information at thunderbay.ca/grants. So there's information on the different types of grant categories. But I do encourage anyone, any organizations that are interested in funding, to reach out to us, program staff, just to have a conversation ahead of time and make sure they're eligible We can kind of flag anything. If they're not eligible, we don't want people to waste their time because it is, you know, it's a grant application is never a fun thing to fill out.
No.
We know that too, as we are also grant applicants to different grant organizations. So we want to make sure that that people talk to us ahead of time and we can help make sure that they're successful as much as possible in terms of how it's submitted.
And the plan too is to do this digitally in the future, not to have a paper-based application.
Yes, exactly. So that's one of the priorities for 2025, and that was included in the budget submission as well, that we move to an online platform to really streamline that process and have kind of a one-stop shop for other funding programs for the city as well, and not just this one. This is one program, but we have an opportunity where organizations could apply to various different funding programs within the city, or at least see what they might be eligible for. So we're looking forward to that, and hopefully we can have a new application process in the near future.
Now, you were at council last night. A couple questions. What was kind of the reaction around the table last night?
I think it was pretty positive. There weren't too many questions. A little bit of, you know, questions around how museums are funded in other communities. It comes through our funding program here, and it certainly does in other communities, but in some, they are funded as a part of a city department.
Mm.
There was a question about, you know, the challenges that some of the organizations are facing, particularly on the social service side of the program. And it's, you know, certainly something that we are collecting information on from those applicants. We do hear a lot from them about the funding challenges. That's one of the biggest challenges to continue to operate their programs and services, is that funding is becoming more and more scarce. And so, you know, we try to keep an eye on that and factor that into our decisions as well. You know, higher demand on services, rising costs, inflation, and in some cases, for some of them, revenues are down and still kind of coming back up from the pandemic as well. So yeah, I think it was overall pretty positive, not too many questions.
And then finally, if people want to get involved, you gave the information out already, but is there a deadline to apply?
Yeah, so the next deadline for projects is March 21st for 2025. So the project category has two intakes. So that's the first one. But there's going to be a second one in October as well for projects. And then for operating and sustaining, it's the same application form as for both categories. And then that will be due on June 20th, 2025.
Okay. Well, Callie, I'm sure we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Jeff.
That's Callie Hemsworth. She is the coordinator of planning, projects, and development with the Community Services Department here at the city. And she joined me today in the Minute Studio. And a big thanks for listening to The Minutes this week. Of course, if you want more information about City Council, agendas, or minutes, visit thunderbay.ca/council. If you want to listen to past episodes or maybe provide some feedback, visit thunderbay.ca/theminutes. You can also find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, plus you can find them on YouTube and on our website as well. That's thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. I'm Jeff Walters. Thanks for listening this week. We'll chat again next week. Make it a great day.